Thank you for tuning in to Aster Investment Management's podcast series. This week, our Chief Investment Officer, John Eckstein, and Senior Managing Director, Mac O'Brien, discuss the current economic outlook in the era of COVID-19. Thank you both for joining us today.
Hello, and welcome back to another edition of Aster's Economic Week in Review. Today, we have Aster's Chief Investment Officer, John Eckstein. John, thanks for being here. Happy Friday.
Thanks for having me, Mac. It's nice to be here.
That being said, today is Friday, April 17th. Again, Sibila, thank you for the introduction. We continue to have just tremendous economic data coming in as a result of COVID-19's impact on the economy. Today, we're going to talk about jobless claims, industrial production, leading economic indicator report came out, retail sales. We have some housing starts data. Our podcasts typically aren't longer than 10 to 15 minutes, but for those that just want a quick summary, John, what happened over the course of the past week and what are your thoughts on the economy?
Yeah, we're getting a little bit of a richer data set for March available, sort of finished parts of the picture. We do actually have a few of the high frequency data points for April. By high frequency, I mean comes out more often than monthly, so weekly data or daily data. The economic data that we have is pretty grim overall, right? Like wherever you're looking, economic data is declining. We're still looking for a bottom.
Yeah, John, thanks. And we're going to get into that data in a second. Before that, silver linings. I mean, in terms of green shoots or anything to be optimistic about the economy, what do you see out there from a green shoots or positive overall sentiment?
From a positive perspective, you know, I think people have been more compliant than I might have expected with social distancing guidelines. You know, we have probably, you know, even if we had started a week later, the death toll would have been 100,000 higher, right? And that's not good for the economy either. You know, I think that overall, we're doing a good job from the health perspective, which is the most important thing to do. There is no, I just want to point out that sometimes people say, you know, the epidemiologists want to do one thing and the economists want to do another. There is no real substantive disagreements among, you know, reputable economists and reputable healthcare professionals. We need to get this under control for the economy's sake and for the sake of the millions of people whose lives we're going to save. There's no real conflict there.
So we're going to start with the same data point that we start with every week, which is jobless claims. The numbers have been jaw-dropping. This is the fourth week, I think, in a row where we've had a jobless claims that actually reflect impact from COVID-19. Another 5 million or so people filing for unemployment. John, what do you think of the jobless claims number, but really take it a step deeper, and what do you think about the unemployment number right now? Where is it at, and where do you think it's going to end up the year?
Yeah, you know, we think right now on the order of 20 million people are filed for jobless claims, right?
22, I think. And all of 2008, it was 25, the entire financial crisis or something.
So this is a very, very compressed and severe recession. And so this is probably consistent with a unemployment rate of around 15%. There might be some technical difficulties in calculating that number because you're only accounted as unemployed if you are looking for work in the reference week, so which is actually this week today. You might want to be looking at things like the labor force participation ratio, employment population ratio, underemployment rate. You might be looking at some ancillary numbers rather than the unemployment rate. But the reality is that unemployment is extremely, as you know, you and I would sort of commonly understand it, is extremely high. Probably 15%, probably higher than at the trough of the global financial crisis.
Yeah, and you know, not to be dark cloud.
Well, we're going to be realistic, right?
We need to, be realistic.
We need to look at reality in the face if we're going to manage it.
I try to consume as much information and read as much as I can. And when you look at people talking about the economy coming back online, right? And you look at the reports of the cities or running out of the payroll protection program, the funding for it. And so we had these initial huge numbers in unemployment claims. And my question and kind of my comments or my concern is that when the funding eventually stops for PPP, and I think that most companies are getting 2 or 3 months of funding to be able to cover their payroll and their fixed costs, their mortgage, their rent, et cetera. If the economy doesn't come fully online, which it won't, in that time frame, the companies are going to be faced with the decision to keep their workers if they have the balance sheet to do so, or to start laying off portions of their workforce, which will have another surge of unemployment claims.
You're right. So multiplier effects, second order effects are also a consideration too, right? Say a restaurant reopens, but it opens with a third of the tables it used to have. So they have to lay off some of their employees, and the people they buy supplies from, linen from, they all suffer as well. And so we're going to see how that plays out over the next few months. But we're not there yet. We're still looking for first order effects. Okay, one more thing to consider about claims, Mac, is we don't know where we are in terms of the backlog of claims. State systems are not designed for this volume. And it could be the case that people have filed and they're just not being counted yet. We'll have to see a few more weeks. You know, you can also look at the continuing claims number, which is up to 11 million. That's the number of people who are receiving benefits. So that's another thing to be looking at.
Yeah. And we've talked about it in prior podcasts. I mean, Illinois is still not set up to take filings from independent contractors. And I think there's a lot of states that are similarly not set up to take filings from independent contractors, your hair salon people, my wife's a photographer. There's a whole part of the economy of independent contractors that qualify, and they're not working. They're not getting paid, and nor have they filed for unemployment yet. And they will soon. So we could see some additional waves of people coming in here.
Yeah. I mean, we know the reality right? There's a lot of people unemployed, 30%, 25%, something like that.
And you mentioned anecdotally just briefly a second ago, the underemployed. I mean, I think that is a huge data point to consider, because you have a lot of people or companies that are reducing pay for their employees versus laying them off, as well as people that are in roles where their bonuses and their monthly paychecks are based on whether it's sales of a good or whatever the case may be. You have people that are still technically employed, but they're vastly underpaid relative to what they're used to, which is going to impact, of course, consumer confidence and the trickle-down effect from that underemployed statistic.
Yes, we mentioned our chart pack a lot here, which you'll give the URL for. And we do have underemployment as one of the charts that we have in there, though it'll be a few months before that chart catches up with reality.
Right. Right. John mentioned a URL. So for the listeners, if you want to see a lot of the economic charts that the Aster Investment Committee reviews, you can digest those in two ways. One is our website, asterim.com/charts, A-S-T-O-R-I-M, I for investment, M for management. Or you can go to the App Store on your Android or iPhone, and you can search Aster Investment. So John, moving on from jobless claims, you know, the consumer, people filing for unemployment, let's see how that's impacting retail sales, which, as you can imagine, took a huge hit in the month of March. John, real quick, I'm going to give some data for the data geeks out there. Vehicle sales fell over 25%. Gas sales fell over 17%. Restaurant sales, to be expected, fell over 26%. But there were some positive silver linings in this, with grocery sales jumping over 25%. A lot of that had to do with stockpiling, which we'll get to in a second. But overall, John, this is just the beginning of a grim retail picture.
It is. It is. And I think you see, you know, traffic in department stores, you know, dropping closer to zero, right? Furniture store traffic dropping. Some of that's made up online, not all of it.
And this, you mentioned department stores. I mean, clothing stores, I'm looking here, clothing stores are down over 50%.
And I think that's just March, right? That's they were open for the first half of March.
Yeah, so right.
What happens in April? You know, some of the stockpiling. We had earnings report for Rite Aid a couple of days ago, and the CEO was mentioning that they did see a boost in the second half of March, and then it trailed off in April. And I think people will moderate their overbuying, you know, pasta and rice and beans and what have you.
Yeah, I mean, you go to the grocery stores, I'm in the suburbs of Chicago, and it wasn't as bad as what I saw across the country.
There's not a lentil to be found in New York City, Mac. There's no
no kidding. I mean, everyone every package of meat they could buy and the bread.
It's not true. Actually, the trick is to go to the ethnic grocery stores. So if you go to like an Asian grocery store, an African grocery store, like they got eggs, they got meat, they got everything. You should go there.
I think that hoarding or the stockpiling has passed. You know, I was guilty.
I think it's dissipating too.
Yeah. I was in January. I was watching this breakout in Wuhan in late December, early January. An article I read turned me onto it, and I found a couple Instagram handles of people reporting live on the streets of Wuhan, and it was just pandemonium. It was panic. It was crazy. Before it was even in the United States, really, I went out and bought like $150 worth of rice and beans, which is comical because my kids don't eat rice and beans. So
I love rice and beans.
Yeah. The whole stockpiling thing is probably dissipating a bit, but no one's eating out. I mean, our grocery bill, even though we're just doing week by week normal grocery shopping, it's probably triple what it normally is.
Yeah, people will be buying more grocery stores because they're not eating out.
So, John, let's move on to the other side of the economy, right? Retail sales is, to an extent, on the service side of the economy. But let's talk about production. Industrial production came in at negative 5.4%. To give listeners a perspective, the month before that, it was positive by 0.5%. It's important to note that coming into 2020, throughout 2019, the portions of 2019, the manufacturing side of the U.S. economy was actually in a contraction.
Yeah, we were actually looking at weakness in the manufacturing sector, which you can see in the purchasing manager, some of the purchasing managers' indices, based probably on the weak global environment, a weak trade environment. Industrial production was negative even before this number in like January. And if we look at some of the higher frequency data, so higher frequency meaning just comes out daily instead of monthly or quarterly, we see additional drops in, you know, sort of beyond the sort of rough March figure. So looking into data from April, it's all pretty grim, right? So the amount of oil being petroleum products being delivered to end users, the amount of number of railroad, freight boxcars, steel production, all of that is down sharply. You know, steel to recession levels, railroad to unprecedentedly low levels. So all of that is looking grim.
Yeah, you know, an anecdotal story is I have, again, suburb of Chicago, and there's a train line that takes all of us into the city for work. And that's also the lines used for freight coming in and out. And I was hiking with my kids. My kids love the trains. We watch them. The containers double stacked. And that's what we've seen over the past decade. And now, yesterday, I think maybe single stack for the first 20% of the freight train, and the rest were just all empty carriages, right? My aunt and uncle, that part of their rail business is a broker to store cars that aren't being used. They know the yards around the country, and then they find, like, whether it's British Petroleum or other clients, and they say, hey, we have all these rails. You know, you can't just take them off the rail and park them in a parking lot. So they have to find all these, not graveyards, but these rail yards where you can store all these cars, and they're overwhelmed with how busy they are. There's nothing moving, nothing's moving.
Yeah, it's consistent with what I've seen. Very, very, not quite unprecedented levels, but certainly very, very low levels. It's comparable to where we were in the oil patch slowdown in 2016.
Yeah, and these higher frequency reports, I'm very interested in some of these, John. We need to put these on the website for our listeners and our clients, because a lot of times we have our clients who are financial advisors, financial professionals. They talk about economic data and they say, are you sure that the economic data in this particular unprecedented times is the right data points to be looking at? And I don't think a lot of people realize that there are some very high frequency reports that give you a very clear picture of where the economy is coming from and where it's going. And it's not so much month over month data that is telling us what's going on.
Yeah, I do think overall, like, you do want to be guided by the data, not what you, not sort of the fear, the greed, and you see on CNBC, right? Like, we might miss out the first 2 weeks of the eventual rally, but, you know, we don't know where the next move is going to be up or down. And so we're going to look like for the data to show us.
Yeah. And so that's a good segue, John. So something I see on CNBC that I always kind of look at with one eyebrow up is when they come out with housing starts or permits, because they use it as such a positive. In this case, housing starts came out with a decent number, and they use it as things aren't that bad. But I always think that with permit pulls and housing starts, that it's such a lagging indicator. And I don't think it's a data point that people should be looking at as saying, oh, people are still building new homes. If you were going to build a home 3 months ago, you probably still started that home in March, right? So yeah, let's segue over to housing starts, you know, decent number at about 1.2 million housing starts. I mean, am I wrong there with that assumption, John, or what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I'm not sure exactly how that's working. I mean, what are people even legally allowed to do? This housing start means you've got one guy like digging a foundation in an empty lot somewhere. You know, it's hard to say. The housing market has been definitely its own. For the last 20 years, the housing market has been on its own course. To a certain extent, that's determined the extent of the economy. When you think about 2008, the global financial crisis, you know, it's been tooling along at much lower levels ever since. It did show, housing starts showed a big drop. Adjusted numbers are probably odd because of a somewhat warmer winter, so people are probably able to build a little bit more. And I think, you know, if you look at things like the Mortgage Bankers Association index of mortgage applications to purchase, they break it out between purchase and finance. You'll see those dropping a lot. I think that the housing market is probably on hold, not in the same way as the restaurant market is, right? And it's easier to imagine the housing market bouncing back to a certain degree because, like, nothing, if I want to sell my house, like, I can't sell it in April because no one can come look at it, but I could probably sell it in June if I'm willing to take a little bit of a discount.
Yeah. And permits, John, I mean, like you just said, permits is simply a piece of paper. So when I see on the news, permits are up or down and they use it as a major data point. It's, I mean, it literally is just someone saying, I intend to build a house. I just don't think it makes much sense to put a lot of weight behind that data point.
Yeah. I had a uncle who used to say, if there's three birds sitting on a wire and one of them decides to leave, how many birds are on the wire? Well, there's still three because the other one has only made a decision. It hasn't actually done anything yet. And I think permits are similar.
So yeah, with housing starts, permits, new home sales, et cetera, I think it's something that we kind of put on the back burner. Of course, we'll talk about it as the data comes out, but with people not being able to go see homes, I just think that this is something that's going to be a small blip and we will keep our eye on it, but we're not going to put a bunch of weight behind it on these podcasts. So let's switch over to, I think, one of the most interesting and probably important reports of the week, and that's the leading indicator report that just fell off a cliff. And for the listeners, real quick, the LEI, or the leading indicator, is a composite of 10 forward-looking components, including things like building permits, stock market activity, new factory order, unemployment claims, etc. And in 60 years of records, no month was as bad for the U.S. economic outlook as March 2020. The LEI fell roughly 7% or so. Is that right, John?
Just to nuance that number, yeah. So the amount it fell isn't, so it's just an index, right? So it's, you can't map that onto economic growth directly. But yeah, the LEI index fell about 7% month to month, with the biggest monthly drop. But we're at a level of year-over-year changes, which we haven't got as bad as the Great Recession yet. Again, this is March data. The number is sort of within spitting distance of the 2001 recession. But so right now we're down 6% year-on-year, and we got down to about down 20% in the global financial crisis, at the trough of the global financial crisis. You had an unprecedented one-month drop, but to a level which is still not as bad as it has been in the past.
Okay. Before we wrap up, I'm going to ask you two questions. If there is one thing that you think is a green shoot in the economy, things that are helping you be optimistic about the potential rebound in growth, what would that be? And then the opposite of that, which is, what is the most concerning thing that you are watching and keeping your eye on?
So I guess the best thing would be Americans are doing better at social distancing than maybe I would have anticipated. You know, if we had started even a week later, it'd be another 100,000 people dead. There isn't really a conflict between economists and epidemiologists about what to do. Like, we need to get the medical situation under control before we can, that's the best thing to do for the economy too, right? 3 million dead Americans is not going to make a robust recovery either. And so, like, we need to do both. So I think we've been doing a pretty good job of that, you know, different state by state, and we'll see how things evolve in the next couple months. So the thing that I'm most worried about, the labor market and the second order effects from that, the multiplier effects from that. The thing that's sort of off the radar to a lot of people is probably the state and local budgets, where a lot of the direct fighting of the COVID is on the back of state and local governments. Their tax bases are getting decimated. State governments, certainly. Local governments are funded a lot by property taxes, which are more stable. So the states are going to have to, if nothing changes, they all have to run budget amendments. And if nothing changes, they're going to have to cut spending just at the worst possible time, right? So every teacher they fire in 2021 is some restaurant's customer. And so that is an area that I'm concerned about, which I don't think is getting enough attention.
Wow. Yeah, that is concerning. I didn't think about that from a state budget perspective and balancing, you know, the amendment to balance that budget and how much it's costing to fight and to do what we're doing here. Like you said, very interesting. It'll be for the record books how this plays out. So let's wrap this up. So John, very interesting take on the local government's balance sheets, the need to balance that from a constitutional perspective, and what it's costing to fight to shore up the effects of COVID-19. A lot of stuff to digest and to watch over the coming weeks and months. Next week, we have a really interesting data set. It's existing home sales, again, jobless claims, the PMI composite flash, which I think is a great report. It shows a lot of, like you say, higher frequency. I think there's some consumer sentiment stuff in there. Durable goods. Anything else before we take off for the weekend, John?
No, plenty to talk about next week. We'll keep an eye on things for you.
Okay, great. Everyone, thanks for listening. Remind, please subscribe if you'd be so kind to give us a 5-star review, and have a great weekend.
Thanks, Mac. Have a good weekend.
Yeah, John. Bye-bye.
To learn more about Aster Investment Management's research and strategies, please visit us on the web at www.asterim.com or stay up to date by following us on LinkedIn, Twitter, and our app is also available on the App Store and Google Play. Thank you. Aster Investment Management, LLC, is a SEC-registered investment advisor. All information contained herein is for informational purposes only. This is not a solicitation to offer investment advice or services in any state where to do so would be unlawful. Analysis and research are provided for informational purposes only, not for trading or investing purposes. All opinions expressed are as of the date of publication and subject to change. They are not intended as investment recommendations.